My name is Juan Altiaga, and I am pro bono counsel for defendant Michael Bernard. In this case, the district court allowed Mr. Bernard to represent himself in a jury trial in which—
Are you pro bono or are you court appointed?
Both.
Okay.
In this case, the district court allowed Mr. Bernard to represent himself in a jury trial in which he faced a potential life sentence, even though Mr. Bernard has a lifelong history of suffering from schizophrenia, paranoia, bipolar disorder, and severe depression.
He was competent at the time, though, wasn't he?
He was competent to stand trial, yes. And even though Mr. Bernard had initially been deemed mentally incompetent to even stand trial, the district court allowed Mr. Bernard to represent himself under these circumstances based on its legally erroneous determination that Mr. Bernard's competence to represent himself at trial was governed by the same standard governing his competence to stand trial.
You aren't suggesting that if a person is once incompetent, they can never be competent again to stand trial.
Okay. No. In Indiana v. Edwards, the Supreme Court expressly held that the standard governing a defendant's mental competence to stand trial is an inadequate standard for the separate and distinct inquiry of whether a defendant is competent to proceed to trial pro se.
Are you sure about that, or is it the standard to deny a person the right to Sixth Amendment to represent himself?
I think that the Edwards decision makes clear that district court or trial courts must apply different and heightened standard.
As I read Edwards, the court allowed the state in that instance to apply a different standard, but didn't seem to require it.
Our position is that Edwards requires the district court to apply this heightened standard under which it has to.
Find that language in Edwards, requires.
And on page 173 of the decision, the court says, you know, here the higher standard seeks to measure the defendant's ability to conduct trial proceedings. And then on page 174, the court says, you know, a very different set of circumstances, which in our view calls for a different standard. So it calls for a different standard. Now the district court still has the authority to deny or does not have to force a defendant to have counsel at trial, but we believe that the Edwards decision makes clear that a district court must conduct the additional inquiry of whether a defendant is competent to conduct trial proceedings on his own once there's.
Well, counsel, I think I agree with you to a certain degree, and that is that I think it's important for the trial judge to have an understanding of the extent of his discretion with respect to this issue and understand that under Edwards, he could require the defendant to meet a higher burden to represent himself. He doesn't mandate it, I don't think, but at least could. And I guess the problem I have in this case, and maybe this is a question better presented to the government, is that the judge was completely oblivious to that standard, didn't understand it.
We agree, and that's our argument, is that the district court committed a clear legal error by failing to apply the correct standard, even though the Supreme Court had issued its Edwards decision 2 years prior to the competency hearing in this case. And the government does not dispute that fact. They do not dispute that the district.
I don't understand what your position is, though. If Edwards doesn't create a standard that necessarily controls this case, well, how did the judge make an error?
Our position is that it does create a higher standard.
I said if it doesn't.
Okay.
If it doesn't, if you're reading Edwards wrong, then you lose.
I don't think so. I think the district.
And how do you win?
I mean, I think it was incumbent on the district court to apply the correct standard.
I know that, but you're saying Edwards changed the standard.
Yes.
But I'm saying if Edwards didn't change the standard, then your argument is what?
Well, I think Edwards is clear that it requires the court to conduct the additional inquiry, whether you call it a new standard or a different standard. It clearly requires an additional inquiry, which is if a borderline competent.
I asked you this to start with. Wasn't Edwards about denying a person the right to represent themselves?
Yes.
This case isn't about that, is it?
No.
This case is about granting a person the right. Isn't that a difference right there?
It's different factual circumstances, but
the difference I'm trying to ask anyway is, in our case, it's a question of, is he competent to exercise his constitutional right? The Edwards case was postured, what does it take, what can it take, to deny a person's constitutional right? Isn't that a difference in these cases?
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
You disagree with me. factually or legally?
I disagree with you legally. I think the Edwards case makes clear that district courts must conduct the additional inquiry once a borderline defendant seeks to represent himself at trial. The trial courts must conduct the additional inquiry of whether the defendant has the competency to actually conduct trial proceedings on his behalf.
But then what standard, if there is a second inquiry to be held, what is the standard for that second inquiry is the question.
Well, the Supreme Court didn't set forth an explicit standard. It said the district courts would be in a position to make that determination based on, you know, the facts and the record before them.
Okay, you can continue your argument.
So here, the government does not dispute that the district court committed a clear legal error by failing to apply the Edwards standards. Instead, they just simply argue that this error was harmless because the district court would have granted Mr. Bernard's request to proceed pro se even if it applied the Edwards standard. Our position is that this argument finds absolutely no support in the record.
You say the error was harmless. Assuming that we get there, do we apply harmless error review or plain error review to this issue, given that no one stood up to object when your client decided that he wanted to represent himself?
Our position would be that harmless error review would be applied because the question of what legal standard should have been applied to the determination of whether Mr. Bernard was competent to represent himself at trial is a legal question that this court should review de novo. Also, the question of the standard and Mr. Bernard's competency to represent himself at trial was expressly reviewed, raised, and decided. And even if the plain error standard did apply, we feel that Mr. Bernard would still be entitled to relief because the district court clearly erred by applying a wrong standard when determining whether Mr. Bernard was competent to represent himself at trial. This clear legal error clearly impacted Mr. Bernard's substantial rights because it deprived him of the fundamental rights to counsel and a fundamental right to a fair trial. In addition, this error calls into question the fairness and integrity of his trial because the Supreme Court has made clear that a trial cannot be fair where you allow a mentally incompetent defendant to represent himself at trial. So our position is that when you apply the harmless error standard.
I want to get this straight again so I understand your argument. You claim there's a standard that's set by Edwards, but you admit that Edwards is a different legal posture than the case in front of us.
The facts in Edwards are different.
I did not ask that legal posture. In that case, the court was asked with whether or not a state could deny a constitutional right and by what standard. And our case is, by what standard do you allow a constitutional right? Do you agree with that?
No, I think I respectfully disagree with that. I think.
How do you disagree?
I think Edwards establishes the legal principle that once you have a borderline mentally competent defendant seeking to represent himself at trial, then trial courts must conduct the additional inquiry.
Well, let me read this to you from the Supreme Court decision. This is the Edwards case. We must decide whether in these circumstances the Constitution forbids a state from insisting that the defendant proceed to trial with counsel, the state thereby denying the defendant the right to represent himself. Well, did that happen in our case? Was he denied the right to represent himself?
No.
He was granted the right to represent himself. So that's a difference right there, isn't it? You may not think it amounts to much, but isn't that a difference? Edwards had to do with under what circumstances a state could or should or can allow someone to, the state can take away a right from someone. Isn't that right? That's what Edwards was. You disagree with me and Justice Breyer for the court?
I just feel like Edwards cannot. It seems like the court is trying to limit Edwards to a specific factual pattern, and our position is that Edwards establishes a broader general principle that.
And then the court goes on to say, this is the question Judge Diaz asked. He said, does it allow or does it require? And the court said at page 2385, we now turn to the question presented. We assume the criminal defendant has sufficient mental competence to stand trial and that the defendant insists on representing himself during that trial. We ask whether the Constitution permits a state to limit the defendant's self-representation right by insisting upon representation by counsel at trial. Doesn't the court make it very clear? They're faced with the state trying to do something to limit a person exercising their U.S. constitutional rights. Here, the court didn't have anything to do with limiting his rights. The court was granting his rights. But you don't think that's the distinction in Edwards? Or you somehow read Edwards to be broader than the language of Edwards, I guess?
Our position at Edwards establishes a general principle that once a borderline competent defendant seeks to represent himself at trial, then it's incumbent on the trial court to conduct additional inquiry.
To what standard? A higher standard than the competence to stand trial?
Yes, the Supreme Court used the term heightened standard, different standard in Edwards. It didn't specify a specific standard. It said it's a heightened standard because you have to conduct this additional inquiry of whether the defendant not only is competent to stand trial and waive the right to counsel, but whether the defendant is also competent to conduct trial proceedings without the assistance of counsel.
Do you have a circuit case or any other case where this Edwards principle was expanded in the manner in which you're trying to expand it here?
We do not, Your Honor.
What does that say about Judge Shedd's questions regarding the true limits of Edwards?
Well, I mean, Edwards is a fairly recent decision. We just didn't find any decisions that were directly on point.
Okay. One way or the other? Like for you or against you?
We didn't, Your Honor. Under the harmless error standard, it is our position that the district court would have denied Mr. Bernard's request to proceed pro se had it applied the correct Edwards standard. First, the district court had two psychological reports which detailed Mr. Bernard's lifelong severe mental illness. Second, the report that recommended that he be found competent to stand trial did not opine on whether he had the capacity to represent himself at trial, even though it explicitly noted that Mr. Bernard had expressed the desire to represent himself at trial. The district court knew that Mr. Bernard had been found mentally incompetent to even stand trial at the commencement of the case.
Let me ask you about other decisions. And these days, I'm not quite sure I know they don't mean much, if anything, but what about unpublished decisions from the Fourth Circuit? Did you find the Wiggins case on what Edwards does and doesn't say?
We did not, Your Honor.
And I'm not saying you're bound by this at all or anything like it, but it's not published. It's 212 Westlaw at 3291733. And I'll just read part of it. It says, finally, Wiggins, this is unpublished now. It doesn't bind us, contends that the district court erred in failing to hold sua sponte a hearing as to Wiggins' competency to represent himself. To the extent that Wiggins asked us to hold that Indiana versus Edwards, your case, affirmatively requires a district court to make explicit findings regarding a defendant's competence to conduct his own defense before granting a motion to proceed pro se, your position, we decline to transform Edwards' permissive holding into a rigid edict that Wiggins requests. Now, I know it's catching you flat-footed, but aren't you making the argument that at least loses in this unpublished case?
Based on what Your Honor has read, I think that case is somewhat an opposite in that the issue seems to be that whether the district court erred by failing to sua sponte conduct a competency hearing. Here, that's not the issue. The competency hearing was conducted, and the district court just failed to apply the correct standard during the competency hearing.
Well, then it cites it, it says, see Ed, the Constitution permits states to insist upon representation by counsel for those competent enough to stand trial, but who still suffer from severe mental illness. And it says, see U.S. versus Turner, which is an Eighth Circuit case. Edwards, and this is Turner saying, Edwards allows but does not require a judge to bar a defendant from proceeding pro se under limited circumstances. So
our position is not that Edwards...
It's not sua sponte, but it makes the point that Edwards is a permissive situation, not a required.
Our position is not that Edwards requires that the district court deny a request to proceed pro se.
Nobody said you did.
Our position is that it requires to conduct the additional inquiry of whether the defendant, once he's deemed...
Well, not only that, but it requires that the district court to be aware that the standard exists, and it doesn't appear the district court was aware. In fact, the district court was misled by your client's trial counsel into believing that the standard was something other, the permissive, whatever you want to call it, permissive or required standard was something other than Edwards. Isn't that your point?
We agree, yes, Your Honor. And if I could briefly just, we also raise an ineffective assistance of counsel claim based on that same point that trial counsel was ineffective for failing to cite to the district court the correct legal standard on such a crucial issue as to whether Mr. Bernard was competent to represent himself.
Stop for just 1 second. Just state again now. You said it's ineffective assistance of counsel for failing to state what as the proper guidance and standard for whether or not this man could represent himself. You say he got it wrong because he didn't cite the proper standard. And you say the proper standard is what?
Edwards, where you have to conduct the additional inquiry of whether the defendant, once he's deemed competent to stand trial.
Inquiry to what standard? What standard? Inquiry plus what standard to be determined?
Well, the Supreme Court did not set forth like a hard and fast standard that has to be applied. It said, under these circumstances, district courts have to apply the additional inquiry of whether a defendant is competent to conduct trial proceedings.
That might only matter if there's a different standard to be applied. If it's the same standard, if the standard is the same, why do you need a second inquiry?
It's not the same standard in the sense the Supreme Court referred to it as a heightened standard, as a different standard, because it's requiring the additional determination of whether the defendant can conduct trial proceedings.
Edwards, it was a question of denying a defendant his right. So, in fact, if you're not trying to deny a defendant his right, why is it? Where's there any law anywhere to say there's a difference, a second inquiry, and a heightened standard, or any other standard?
Our position
is Edwards there for you.
Our position is that Edwards creates the requirement that district courts conduct this additional inquiry, establishes this general principle, is not limited to.
But it only makes sense to you that you need a second inquiry if there's a different standard to be met.
I think the second inquiry is the different standard.
No, it's not. A second inquiry is not a different standard, but I'm saying a second inquiry, your argument only makes sense if there is a different standard you have to meet, right? There's a different standard. You say there's a different standard. We're talking about inquiry, but because quite frankly, you could meet all that in one inquiry, couldn't you?
Our position is that it's a heightened standard. It's a different standard based on the express words of Edwards.
Okay, all right.
If I could just go to our ineffective assistance of counsel claim.
You have some time reserved.
Okay, thank you.
I'll let you raise it then.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You understand, Ms. Watford McKinney, that he's going to talk about ineffective assistance of counsel on rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, glad to hear from you.
May it please the court, my name is Yvonne Watford McKinney. I represent the United States. And Your Honor, it is our position that this is a different situation from the Edwards case. And even if it weren't, this court has made clear in Wiggins that Edwards is a permissive holding. It doesn't require the judge to do anything.
Does it require the judge to be aware of Edwards?
Well, yes, but I would say
how can a judge exercise his or her discretion in deciding whether or not to apply Edwards and the so-called heightened standard, whatever that might be? And I think the standard is that there's a different test for capacity to self-represent as opposed to a capacity to stand trial. But how in the world can a judge exercise his or her discretion if the judge is oblivious to the existence of that discretion? That's the problem that I have with this case.
I understand, and I would submit in this case, Your Honor, that defense counsel misstated the law, he misstated the standard in this case, but the judge made no response to it. The judge did what the judge would typically do when determining whether an individual was competent to stand trial and then competent to self-represent. He asked a series of questions. He had an extended inquiry. That has to be done in any case.
You don't think the judge would have had to have said something along the lines, well, I'm aware what the Supreme Court has said in Edwards, but I'm going to exercise my discretion here, and the defendant has insisted upon his right to self-representation, and based on the evidence before me, Edwards notwithstanding, I'm going to allow him to proceed. That didn't happen here.
No, it didn't. Perhaps it should have.
Is it necessary, though?
I don't believe it's necessary.
Let's get to the bottom to answer his question, then I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
But is it necessary for that to be done on this record?
I don't believe so.
Why
isn't
it? Why do you think it's not necessary?
Because this defendant had stated all along that he wanted to go pro se, And this court granted his desire to go pro se. This court found that he was competent to stand trial and then competent to represent itself.
This court unhappily found that the district judge, to his credit, was very, very concerned about this defendant and his to represent himself. He said as much. He was very concerned about it. And I guess my concern is that had the district judge been clued in to the proper standard, he might have said, well, wait a minute. I do have the authority here to disallow this request. And based on this defendant's history, prior mental history, this is not a defendant, even if he's competent to stand trial, that I am going to allow my discretion to represent himself. I'm just not going to allow it. But he didn't know, apparently, that he could exercise that discretion. That's the concern that I have.
I understand. But, Your Honor, I think in this case, this judge, in expressing his concern, was primed. He was alerted to look for anything that suggested that this defendant had gone over the edge, that he was no longer competent, and the judge would have stopped the proceedings.
Stand trial or represent himself?
Exactly. I agree. And that's why the judge...
He's asking you a question, I think.
The appellant's lawyer is saying that those are two different standards, and that Edwards suggests that they're different inquiries.
Well, I think the judge, there has to be some, first of all, there has to be a starting place. The judge has to talk to the defendant. The judge has to observe his demeanor and see how he responds and make some sort of assessment based on that. And he does that by asking those competency questions.
I don't think you're directly addressing the issue in my mind. I'm sure you're talking about stuff that's relevant. But let me just tell you about my issues and you tell me. I don't think Edwards establishes any different standard.
It doesn't.
For representing yourself versus being competent to stand trial. I don't know of any case that says in a federal court there's a different standard for that. There is a case, Edwards, that says if a state wants to add some additional standard for the state to take away your right, we as a U.S. Supreme Court will say the state may do that. You may do that, state. We'll allow you to have a higher standard if you want to take away a person's constitutional rights. Are you aware of any law that says to a federal court, if a person's competent to stand trial, you are required to meet a higher standard to let him represent himself?
There is no case. I've found no case. There is no case. And this circuit has said that there is no such case by saying it's permissive. It's a permissive holding. And Edwards says the district court is in the position to make fine-tuned decisions, if there's some reason to go there.
How can you make a fine-tuned decision if you don't know the parameters of the scope of the decision?
I think what this court did was say, when it said that I'm satisfied as of this moment, but I don't know if I'm going to be satisfied later on, that the judge would have stopped his self-representation if it believed that it needed to hold a mental competency hearing and even send him away for another evaluation. I think this judge was right on it.
In the Godinez case, didn't the court say, the U.S. Supreme Court say, the competency standard for pleading guilty or waiving the right to counsel is they considered whether the competency standard for pleading guilty or waiving the right to counsel is higher than the competency standard for standing trial. And the court said it is not.
It's not.
That's what the law is in the federal
right.
courts.
It's absolutely not.
That there's no other. I don't understand what standard the court was not aware of. It was the same standard.
It was the same standard.
If the court was aware that he was competent to stand trial, that then met the standard for him to represent himself. Is that how you see the law?
That's exactly how I see it. And what the point I was trying to make was that if at some point during this trial, the judge had reason to believe that the defendant was no longer competent, then the judge would stop the trial and have a competency hearing. That's the only point that I was trying to make in answer to Your Honor's question. But Edwards creates no standard at all. So we're back to doing just what the judge did.
Well, let me ask you this. Maybe it's standard is the wrong word, but the, the final paragraph, well, not the final paragraph, but at page 2386 of the Supreme Court reporter's version of this opinion, the court says that we consequently conclude that the Constitution permits, and again, I don't say that it's required, but permits judges to take realistic account of the particular defendant's mental capacities by asking whether a defendant who seeks to conduct his own defense at trial is mentally competent to do so. And they say that is to say the Constitution permits states to insist upon representation by counsel for those competent enough to stand trial under Dusky, but who still suffer from severe mental illness to the point where they are not competent to conduct trial proceedings by themselves. That suggests to me that there is a different standard that we're dealing with here.
I think what it suggests to me is that if there is some display, some behavior, something egregious, which puts the court on notice, then the court needs to stop, or would stop, in this case would stop, and conduct that 4241 inquiry.
Competence to stand trial inquiry, not to represent himself.
Well, I think if he's not competent to stand trial, he certainly isn't competent to represent himself.
Well, but Edwards says otherwise, at least suggests otherwise. I mean, well, in Edwards, this defendant was competent to stand trial, and yet the trial judge in Edwards said, you're not competent to represent yourself. So the trial judge must have applied a different standard to that second part of the analysis.
Well, I think what I said, or what I was trying to say, was that if the court had found this defendant not competent to stand trial, then there would be no question about self-representation.
Sure, yeah, that's an easy
one. He has to go there first.
But that's not Edwards. I mean, Edwards suggests that in that gray area, the courts have discretion. And my only point is, it's awfully difficult for a court to exercise his discretion if they're not aware of it. That's what troubles me about this case.
I understand, Your Honor. And the court made no statement following up on counsel's indication of what the proper standard is. So the court was silent on that. The court then just proceeded to do what it would normally do in conducting a competency hearing. With respect to the ineffective assistance of counsel, I would say first that the defendant would have to show that there would be some different outcome as a result of the error that his lawyer made. And in this case, there's no reason to believe that the outcome would have been different. The judge would have conducted the same inquiry that the judge did. That is, the Feretta questions that the court asked to determine whether or not this man knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily waived his right to counsel.
You're suggesting that's plain error review? Is that what you're
saying? I'm suggesting the first thing is that I don't believe that this defendant can meet the standard for ineffective assistance of counsel. I don't believe he can meet that standard at all.
You mean, okay. I was looking back, quite frankly, I was thinking back to an earlier question that Judge Diaz asked, and how do we look at the question of what the trial judge did as far as letting this defendant represent himself? Do we review that for plain error?
I think it's plain error. Okay. I think it's plain error. He had counsel. He had substitute counsel or standby counsel.
And so you would say it's not error, it's not plain, or it doesn't affect his substantial rights?
I would say
all three of them.
I would say all three.
Okay. All right. I interrupted you. Were you want to say anything else about ineffective assistance?
No, I would just rely on my brief, Your Honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Ortega.
Thank you, Your Honor. To address Mr. Bernard's ineffective assistance of counsel claim, the government does not dispute that counsel failed to cite the correct standard or the correct principles inquiry test for determining whether Mr. Bernard was competent to represent himself at trial. All they argue is that Mr. Bernard, based on a record that's been developed, cannot show that he was prejudiced because they claim that the district court would still have allowed Mr. Bernard to represent himself at trial had it been aware of the Edwards decision. The record does not support that argument. The district court expressly stated on a record that it was not comfortable with what was going on here. Defense counsel expressed that he was not comfortable with what was going on here. The district court found Mr. Bernard's mental stability to be so unpredictable and questionable that it shackled him throughout the trial because of his severe mental illness. So the record clearly shows that had the district court been aware that it had the authority to deny Mr. Bernard's request to proceed pro se, it would have exercised that authority and denied his request to proceed pro se, and that would have squarely put us under the Edwards fact scenario that Your Honor outlined earlier. And just to go quickly back to the Edwards questions, I think that Judge Diaz hit it on the nail. The district court was required to be aware of what standard, what test it needed to apply, and had the district court been aware of that, it would have denied Mr. Bernard's request to proceed pro se. So the district court couldn't exercise the discretion that it had under Edwards to deny Mr. Bernard's request to proceed pro se because it wasn't aware of the governing law. And had it been aware of the governing law, it would have exercised that discretion and denied Mr. Bernard's request to proceed pro se. So if the court has no other questions, Alvarez.
We have none. And we thank you very much as pro bono and court appointed Mr. Ortega for your representation of your client in this case. Again, we say you've heard it before, probably in court, but we need to have lawyers who are willing to step up and do it and to make the case so that we can have the arguments on both sides to make an informed decision. We thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll step down, Greek counsel, and go to